Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Will gay and lesbian couples ever be allowed to marry in Texas? And if they are, would that indicate some fundamental change in our values? As the United States Supreme Court prepares to hear arguments on same-sex marriage cases from Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, gay and lesbian couples in Texas continue to face an uncertain future. Defenders of the 2005 state constitutional ban argue that legally recognized marriages are sanctioned by the state in part because they advance the public interest in reducing out-of-wedlock births. But that leaves a lot of families headed by same-sex couples in a strange position. They are already raising kids together, but they have to jump through extraordinary legal hurdles just to ensure that both adults have full parental rights. Pamela Koloff joins us to talk about this. She is an executive editor at Texas Monthly. Her article, Modern Family, appears in the March issue of the magazine. Pamela, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about the family you built this story around, Cleopatra De Leon and Nicole Dimmitman. How did they meet and what made them decide to get married?
Yes, I've been interested in writing a policy story about this issue for a long time, but it finally occurred to me that the real way to tell the story was through two people who it fundamentally affected every day. And so I wrote what is essentially a love story between Cleo and Nicole, and told about their story as a partnership and later a marriage, just like any other relationship between two Texans in our state. But then I also showed the way in which they had to face constant inequities because their marriage was not recognized by the state of Texas.
What is their family situation today?
So currently, they've been together since 2001. And they live in Austin. They have a 2-year-old son, and they are expecting a baby girl any day. And they, to me, just in spending time with them, really embodied what I think of as family values. They are completely committed to their children and to having a stable and loving home for them. And they traveled a long way, I think, to finding each other. It wasn't always easy, both as Native Texans, to figure out that they were gay. That was a learning experience as they grew up and into adulthood. And it was a painful journey at times for both of them. But when they found each other, it was a beautiful union, and they have created a very loving home from that.
They married legally in Massachusetts. What does that mean with regard to how their marriage is acknowledged for, first of all, purposes of federal benefits in the United States?
Sure. So what they did, they're both Native Texans, and aside from time they spent in college and time that Cleo spent in the Air Force, they have lived their lives entirely in Texas. But before they decided to have children, they really wanted to codify their relationship and to make it what their straight friends' relationships were. And so they knew they couldn't do that in Texas. And so they took a week-long trip to Massachusetts where they got married in Massachusetts, knowing that when they returned to Texas, that union would not be recognized here, but they felt it was better than nothing. One of the ironies of that, however, is that the federal government has to go by the standards of the state in which the citizens reside. So they still, even though they're married, if one died tomorrow, the other would not be eligible for Social Security benefits to help support their children.
What's interesting is that they told you they consider just doing like a commitment ceremony, you know, saying, I love you, you love me, we plan to spend the rest of our lives together. And this somehow just didn't feel like enough for them. There was something about getting legally married that felt more sort of profoundly different to them.
Yes, and I think that was on two levels. I think one had to do with the legal benefits that they could receive as a married couple. I think the other was a more emotional bond. And I think to my own life, my husband and I were together for 10 years before we got married. And I saw the difference in the way that our families treated us after we publicly committed to each other in that ceremony. So there's, you know, it's not just all about legal benefits and money. There's a huge emotional aspect to all of this as well.
So they came back to Texas, where they have lived all this time. And for purposes of the state, legally, they're like roommates, right? They have no technical relationship within Texas.
That is correct. And I think that status got increasingly complicated for them once they had their son. And something that I was really taken aback by, I thought I had a fair understanding of what gays and lesbians in Texas, what the challenges were that they faced, such as employment discrimination and housing discrimination. But I was really struck by the way in which their ability as parents was so profoundly affected by this ban. So just as an example, they used an anonymous sperm donor the first time they got pregnant. Cleo gave birth to that child. Now, if a straight couple uses a sperm donor or an egg donor, the two parents are both listed on the birth certificate and are both recognized as the legal parents of that child. If a same-sex couple finds themselves in the same situation, that is not true because they cannot be married. So only the biological parent gets her name on the birth certificate and is considered the legal guardian. The other parent has literally no parental rights to the child. And so something that Cleo and Nicole talked about with me that was very scary was Cleo had a very, very difficult labor with their son. And Nicole knew watching that if something happened, to her partner and she were incapacitated or, God forbid, she passed away, that child was a stranger to her under Texas law. She had no rights to that child.
To be clear, if an unmarried heterosexual couple used a donor sperm or a donor egg, they would be entitled to automatic shared parental rights, right? It's not even so much, this is something that only applies to same-sex couples.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the story certainly is moving, and I think many people can relate to what that would feel like of, if a mother is to die in childbirth and the other parent, her other mother, wouldn't have legal claim to her. Has that actually happened in Texas or elsewhere?
You know, not that I know of, and I think that's an important point, but I think that fear, that uncertainty, and all of the legal loops, I mean, here's something that is an important part of that process that I should explain. So in order for the second parent to get parental rights to that child who was conceived of within their marriage, that parent has to go through what's called a second parent adoption process. What that involves is a series. It's very expensive. It's time consuming, involves lawyers, money, all sorts of different things. One of the most demoralizing aspects of it, I think, is that the second parent has to go through a home study with a social worker. So a social worker comes into the home and determines whether this parent is a fit parent, determines whether the household is fit for a child to live in. And I know that when Nicole and Cleo told me about that process, they said it felt very invasive. This social worker, who was a friendly to their cause, spent 6 hours in their home, asked about a wide array of things, such as financial security, mental health histories. Again, these are things that a straight couple does not have to do. And I think that invasiveness and that entering into the private sphere is troubling.
And these families have to go through this even if, for some reason, the other parent, functional other parent, were denied the right to legally adopt that child. They're still going to be living there and helping to raise the child regardless.
Exactly. And one of the most poignant moments in my interviews with Nicole and Cleo was Cleo, again, she carried their first child. And so it was Nicole that was under this scrutiny when they had this home study. And toward the end of the home study, the social worker turned to Nicole and said, "Why would you like to adopt Cleo's son?" And Nicole said, "Because he's my son, too." And I think it's moments like that that are very, very difficult for gays and lesbians. And it's things that they don't necessarily talk about with their straight friends that I, as someone who has a number of gay friends was not aware of before I began reporting on this story.
And a lot of couples that want to have children together, either through, you know, biological means, or they choose to adopt a child, they have to sort of seek out friendly judges, right? There's kind of a under the ground discussion about who to go
yes.
to.
This was another fascinating aspect to things, that even within, you know, fairly politically liberal metropolitan area, that the lawyers there know which judges are comfortable with helping same-sex parents on this journey of adoption and which ones aren't. And so part of what you're doing when you're hiring a lawyer is getting that lawyer to help you navigate that world. And I was really struck that Anise Parker, mayor of Houston, had to deal with this a number of years ago when she adopted her two daughters. The judge she originally was assigned to would not allow the adoption to go through. This is now, of course, the woman who's the most important woman in Houston. And she had to go through a whole series of hoops to find the right judge who would allow her to take. These were two foster children who needed a home.
So let's talk about the issue of the state constitutional amendment that effectively bars same-sex couples from marriage rights here, passed by a significant majority in 2005. What's happened to public opinion since then?
Well, it's very interesting because you hear that number repeated again and again, that this constitutional ban was passed in 2005 with 76% of the vote. And that sounds like quite an overwhelming number. I think there are two things to keep in mind. One is that was a very small segment of the electorate. It was an off-year election. 17% of registered voters voted in that election, and it was an issues election. It was about that particular hot-button issue and getting the quote-unquote values voters to the polls. Also, what we've seen in that time, not just in Texas but nationally, is, I think, a wholesale rethinking of the way that Americans view gays and lesbians and their right to have equal rights. And so the most recent polls in Texas show Texans pretty evenly split on the issue of gay marriage.
Are Nicole and Cleo surprised at how quickly things seem to be turning in favor of same-sex marriage rights? I mean, I'm sure it's not soon enough for them, but...
Yes, it's a good point. I think both yes and no. I think on the one hand, you know, anyone who grew up, I'm the same age as them, anyone who grew up in the 80s and remember some of the sort of inherent homophobia that was in just society at that time, I think they're both amazed at how quickly things have evolved. But I think they're also very impatient. You know, they have been waiting a very, very long time, and their hope was to have this resolved before their baby girl was born. She's due to be born on March 15th, unless the Fifth Circuit does something within the next 2 weeks. I don't think that's going to be a possibility.
My guest is Pamela Koloff. She's an executive editor at Texas Monthly, and she wrote the cover story for the magazine this month. It's about same-sex marriage in Texas, and it's called Modern Family. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. SMU Summer Youth has hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration opens March 3rd at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Pamela Koloff, who's an executive editor at Texas Monthly and wrote the magazine's cover story for March. It's called Modern Family. It's about same-sex marriage in Texas. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or you can email think@kera.org. Pamela, we were speaking before the break about public opinion. You happened to mention to Stephen Becker, our producer, before the show that this piece has received an unprecedented volume of reader response over at Texas Monthly. What are you hearing from people?
Well, you know, you never know whether it's just the people who are the loudest who are writing in or whether this is a fair view of our readership. I think what I've been disheartened by, I certainly didn't expect that everyone would agree with this issue or wouldn't immediately embrace our cover pictures, Nicole and Cleo standing side by side with their son. But I've been shocked at the tenor of the emails and phone calls we've received. What I was expecting was people being, you know, expressing their thoughts from their own spiritual backgrounds that perhaps this is not in line with what they believe, or maybe being upset that we put this on the cover, which they might feel is inappropriate for children to see. Those were the two lines of reasoning I was expecting. Instead, we've received what I would call a lot of hate speech, and none of it that I can repeat on the air. It's been very disturbing, and I don't think it's representative of Texas and Texans. I'm sure it's representative of a small slice of folks, but I think of this as, while a socially conservative state, also a very loving and embracing and welcoming and friendly state. And so, you know, I hope that's not ultimately representative.
When you're talking about hate speech, I mean, at some point, everyone's inclination is to dismiss whatever people say. Are people who are writing in to object to the existence of the article and the cover, are they making particular arguments as to why this shouldn't have been covered the way it was in Texas Monthly?
Less that than perhaps the nicest word I could share is disgusting, and their children will be ashamed of them. A lot of things along those lines, and that's very PG compared to what we've been receiving. So, you know, that's been disheartening because I'm writing about this story because this is something that is happening. This is something that is coming to Texas at the latest by June when the Supreme Court renders its decision on this issue, perhaps sooner when the Fifth Circuit rules. So, you know, we're one of, as of next Wednesday, or excuse me, next Monday, when Nebraska will be the 38th state to legalize gay marriage, we will be one of 12 states left in which gays and lesbians cannot marry. And so I think increasingly it's obvious we're on the wrong side of history, and it's something that will change within the next few months.
How were Nicole and Cleo, how did they make the decision to join with Mark Ferris and Vic Holmes, the other couple party to this lawsuit seeking to get the state to allow same-sex marriage in Texas?
That's a great question. I think all four of them joined very reluctantly and only because they sort of felt they had to. Both Cleo and Mark were not out in their workplaces. So you can imagine going from, in Mark's case in particular, being rather secretive about his personal life to suddenly being on the front page of the newspaper suing the state of Texas. That was quite a leap, especially for him. But I think at a certain point when you literally are treated like a second-class citizen, you know, enough is enough. And they both felt that they had reached out to many, many other friends of theirs to try to get them to join as plaintiffs, and people were afraid. I was really struck just in Facebook comments that I saw about this story from friendly readers, many of them gay and lesbian readers, how often they commented that all four of these plaintiffs were brave. And again, I was a little taken aback by that it would be considered brave to be pictured, photographed with your family. It's a bit sad.
What is the status of the lawsuit right now, and how will the timing of any ruling by the Fifth Circuit affect whether the U.S. Supreme Court ruling expected later in the year has direct bearing on Texas?
So a federal judge in February of last year found that Texas's ban was unconstitutional, and that was in line with almost every federal judge across the country. This includes judges who were appointed by Bush and Reagan, as well as by Obama and Clinton. And I can address why that is a little bit later. But what Judge Garcia in San Antonio did when he made that ruling is he stayed his decision pending appeal to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit is one of the most conservative courts in the country. And I think Judge Garcia's thinking there was, if we allow gay marriages to start now, the Fifth Circuit is going to stop that soon, and then those folks will be left in limbo. So the Fifth Circuit heard the case this January. I was lucky enough to be there in New Orleans to hear those oral arguments, which were fascinating. And we're now waiting for the Fifth Circuit to rule, which really could come any day, or they could hold off until June, which is when the Supreme Court is expected to weigh in.
One interesting argument in support of the ban on same-sex marriage is that marriage is not a right at all, but a subsidy provided by the state. What kinds of benefits does marriage confer to couples from the state of Texas?
Well, there are thousands, literally, most of them financial. But what the state argued, and they really doubled down on this argument before the Fifth Circuit, is what's called the responsible procreation argument. So what the state has argued is both marriage between a man and a woman is long-held tradition that forms the cornerstone of our society, that this is an issue that should be left up to the states, and then sort of most provocatively, that it's this responsible procreation argument that justifies our current rules of law. So what that argument says is because heterosexuals can create children out of wedlock, it's in the state's interest to have that, you know, extra bonus of being able to extend marriage rights to heterosexual citizens so that they'll raise their children in a secure married home. Under that logic, because homosexuals' sexual activity does not produce children, it is not necessary to extend that right to gays and lesbians. There are a lot of problems with that argument. One is that gays and lesbians have children, either via adoption or because one of them is the biological parent. There are 19,000 children who are being raised right now in Texas by same-sex families, and they, as Nicole and Cleo's lawyer told the Fifth Circuit, have been, quote, left out in the cold by these rulings.
Does this ruling imply somehow that heterosexual couples are obligated to produce children in order to qualify for these marvelous subsidies provided by the state?
That's one of the problematic, I think, aspects of this argument, is that if you analyze it for more than a second, it falls apart. We allow infertile couples to get married. We allow elderly couples to get married. It's not a prerequisite that you be able to create children. And in all of their arguments before the Fifth Circuit, that was an issue that they just simply did not have an answer for. By they, I mean the Attorney General's office.
How legally persuasive are the slippery slope arguments against same-sex marriage? You know, people who say redefine marriage to include gay and lesbian couples and you open the door to things like incest and plural marriage and all these things that society continues to agree we don't believe marriage should include.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's a red herring. I haven't seen anything to indicate that there's a movement, a groundswell toward making plural marriages something acceptable across all 50 states, and certainly not bestiality or incest. I'm always curious as to why that is brought up rather than issues of how can we address adultery? How can we address things that truly are a threat to marriage?
And would it be legally acceptable? Is there precedent for making a particular group sort of stand in the way of something else we don't want to happen at their own expense?
That's a really good point. I mean, I think something that I was really struck by in talking to the lawyers that worked on Nicole and Cleo's cases is they really saw their precedent in a case called Loving v. Virginia, which was a case back in 1967 that ended the ban on interracial marriage. And they felt that this issue shares a lot in common with that issue, in that it hasn't necessarily achieved 100% acceptance at the time that we're in, but it's something that is both held up by our Constitution and something that is part of a forward-moving society.
What did you hear from former Governor Perry about the idea of legislating morality?
I was really fascinated by this. In 2005, Rick Perry held this very colorful event in Fort Worth when the gay marriage ban was being put on the ballot. And this was something that in November of that year, voters were being asked to vote on to see whether or not they believed there should be a ban against gays and lesbians marrying. And it was a very... It touched a lot of difficult points. There was a televangelist who spoke, who used some very inflammatory and homophobic comments right before the governor spoke. And one of the things the governor said, in fact, I brought it with me so I could get this just right, but he said that he felt that it was a myth that morality could not be legislated. In other words, that these laws, it's important to legislate morality and to tell people what is morally just and what is not. Unfortunately, that is not how we interpret our Constitution. That's not how we interpret the 14th Amendment. And that's why so many conservative judges have also made the same rulings as liberal judges on this issue.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because this is no longer polarized politically in quite the same ways, perhaps, that it once was.
Sure. So the issue at the heart of all of these lawsuits, and every state has litigation at different stages about gay marriage, but the underlying legal concept is that a gay marriage ban violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, and that Equal Protection Clause extends equal rights to all people. It is part of what formed the Brown v. Board of Education ruling and so many other civil rights rulings. And so the notion is you can't tell one group of people they can get married and another group that they can't. And that's something that across the board, politically, federal judges have agreed upon.
A less pleasant but undeniably important issue here is that same-sex couples married elsewhere but living in Texas cannot divorce here. What happens when same-sex couples living in Texas want or need to break up?
Yes, again, this was something that I just had never thought about before. When Nicole and Cleo married in Massachusetts, I make the point in my story that in some ways they made a greater commitment than your average straight couple who gets married in Texas, because in order for them to get divorced, one or both of them would have to return to Massachusetts for a minimum of 1 year to establish residency. So imagine the disruption to work, their children's lives, and so forth, and the cost of that. And then and only then could they go about getting a divorce. So they're caught in this sort of strange legal limbo, because if we don't recognize marriage, we don't recognize divorce, we don't recognize that gays are parents, but in fact, all these things are actually happening within our state.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Keith in Dallas. Hi, Keith.
Hi. Finally got through. You were having some technical broadcast issues today.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Okay. My question, which I don't think has already been asked, but I don't know because I wasn't able to listen, is you've already mentioned Loving versus Virginia, which was a 9-0 decision on the Supreme Court, and Brown versus Board of Education was also a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court. And I'm wondering if there's any way you think that we could have a 9-0 decision on this case, or is 7-2 the best we can hope for, with the obvious holdouts being Scalia and Thomas?
It's a fantastic question. I would think that 7-2 would be a triumph, and it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But I think the court is so different now than it was back in the day, in the time period that you're talking about, and we almost always get split decisions now, especially on social issues. So I think that would be sort of the best that we could hope for. I'm curious. It was Judge Kennedy who wrote the majority opinion for sort of the two most important precedent-setting cases leading up to where we are now, and that is the Windsor case, which overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, and Lawrence v. Texas, which struck down state bans, Texas's on sodomy. And so it'll be interesting to see whether Kennedy, who's so often a swing vote, actually writes the opinion in this case.
Are you aware, has anyone made arguments about this based on the existence of things like common law marriage in Texas and the fact that a couple, a heterosexual couple that chooses to live together and sort of act as if they are married, certain legal benefits attach even to them, even if they have not, for whatever reason, gone to the trouble of going down and getting married?
That is a point I wish I had made in my story, and I thought of it after we went to press, that if Nicole and Cleo were a man and a woman, they would have that status because they had lived together since 2001 and in every way functioned as a household. They, you know, traded places, putting each other through graduate school. One would work, the other would study. They bought a home together. They did all the things that your average couple does together. So I think that's an excellent point that I wish I had made myself.
Let's talk about this. A couple of weeks ago, there was a couple married in Travis County, two women. What's the status of that marriage and how did that happen?
A great question that I'm not sure anyone has a good answer to right now. Basically, a court order came down from a local judge here in Austin, and he said that the two women who were allowed to get married that day, because of health issues, one of them is in the late stages of ovarian cancer, would not be able to wait for the Fifth Circuit's decision or the Supreme Court's decision. And because of that, should be allowed to marry now. Now, that's a very controversial decision, and we could spend an hour talking about that. But the effect of it was that they were able to get married. The Attorney General's office immediately sought to undo that. Now there's a lot of confusion about whether their marriage will stand or not. And we're going to have to keep an eye on that.
We're speaking this hour with Texas Monthly executive editor Pamela Koloff. Her cover story, Modern Family, is on the March issue of Texas Monthly. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. SMU Summer Youth has hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration opens March 3rd at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Texas Monthly executive editor Pamela Koloff, who wrote this month's cover story. It's called Modern Family, and it's about same-sex marriage in Texas, or the potential for same-sex marriage in Texas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. Pamela, what kind of information can supporters and opponents of same-sex marriage in Texas find about the effects of laws that allow it in other states?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we're still finding a lot of that out. But, you know, as this becomes more and more common, I think all the things that people were predicting would be problems have not. I don't think that from what I can see that most heterosexual couples feel that their marriage is threatened by seeing gays and lesbians get married, for example. There aren't higher rates of divorce based upon those numbers. And so this notion that so many of our legislators put forth in the past year that this idea and in fact this lawsuit and that Nicole and Cleo themselves were a threat to the Texas family, I think just has not been borne out.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Steve in Plano. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi. How are you? My point really is about jurisdiction, and it's about where in the world, where in the United States, and where in time this idea that same-gendered people can marry has come about. I think it's actually rather peculiar. If you consider the ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, their proclivities, what they allowed, what they did, not once did they ever consider marriage to be between same-gendered people? So I think what's going on is really a gaming of the laws that we have, because they're very smart people making very smart arguments using laws that don't even consider this sort of thing because of how new it is.
What do you think, Pamela?
I think that's a really interesting point, and I think it's worth exploring more. I would say that the definition of marriage clearly has evolved. Women are not considered the property of their husbands anymore. We believe in romantic love now, and things that have evolved just really in the past 100 and 150 years. And you can see that reflected in our laws as well. So I hear your point. I don't think it's a bad one, of course, and I think it's worth discussing more. But I also don't think that the definition of marriage has been quite as fixed as people have portrayed it.
It's interesting that many of these arguments talk about the sort of, you know, economic and financial benefits to being married. That's one of the arguments being put forward in support of allowing same-sex couples to marry. On the other hand, it's also true that marriage, in the 21st century United States, is not really thought of as primarily an economic contract in the way that it was maybe hundreds of years ago.
Right. I think that's a really interesting way to put it. I was really struck during oral arguments before the Fifth Circuit that the way that the state characterized marriage sounded very foreign to me. They talked about it being for the purposes of procreation, this very, very narrow definition of marriage that I don't think most people would recognize. And it was interesting to me that the arguments that have always been leveled against same-sex marriage advocates is that they're trying to change marriage or undo marriage, when really, if you looked at what was in the state's briefs here, this notion that it's just for the purposes of procreation are rather odd and narrow.
I was never asked when I applied for a marriage license if I intended to procreate.
Right. Nor is, you know, when an elderly couple goes to get married, nor they ask that either. And so, again, it just doesn't hold up to much scrutiny. That argument's been used in other states, and it just has never gone very far in the appellate process. And I don't think there really is a great constitutional argument against gay marriage. There are many other arguments that can be made, moral, spiritual, religious, and so forth. But when it comes to looking at the 14th Amendment, it's hard to come up with a good constitutional argument why it should not be allowed.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Stephanie on the line in Tyler. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I was in San Marcos recently and talked to a young woman who was attending a women's conference there, and she was going to be studying law. She said, I had mentioned the issues here in Texas to her, and really what I thought was the idea that it was ludicrous that they would bring up polygamy and incest and things. And she said, well, you know, that's very interesting because in the dockets now in Canada is the question of legalization of polygamy. And I just wondered if you had heard anything about that. I assume she knew what she was talking about.
That's quite possible. I'm not familiar with it. It certainly isn't the case here. And again, I think that would represent such a tiny, tiny, fraction of our population. I would be surprised if that's something that gained a lot of traction.
Have Cleo and Nicole experienced backlash just since the publication of this article? Have they gotten angry comments from people who've found a way to track them down?
They have not. They certainly have seen some of the comments on our Facebook page, which were quite incendiary. I think sort of took that in stride, and that they knew that being plaintiffs in this case was part of that. I think what's been more upsetting is, for example, what happened at the Capitol last week, where you had some of our most powerful state representatives and legislators sort of gleefully, for lack of a better word, digging into this three-tiered cake that was made for the purpose of commemorating Texas's ban on same-sex marriage. And I think it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths that, you know, it's one thing if that's what people believe, but this sort of gloating that certain members of our state, our citizens, our neighbors, our friends, can't have the same rights as others, it's a bit unseemly, I think.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked a lot about the financial benefits of marriage, and there's Social Security and filing your taxes together and having, you know, custody, instantly shared custody of any children that come from the marriage. There's also like a social benefit that comes from being married, a sort of legitimacy in our society. Did this come up when you were talking to Nicole and Cleo or other families who were in their situation?
Very much so. I was really struck. This didn't make it into the piece, but I was really struck by something that Nicole said, where she talked about how, you know, when her family, initially, when she and Cleo were first together, when they would introduce Nicole and Cleo to friends, she'd say, this is our daughter Nicole and her, and then there would be sort of this pause, partner Cleo. And she said there was always this awkwardness. There was always this otherness, and that was something that they were always so aware of, and that even the act of getting married in another state, it was a wedding that none of their family could afford to come to. They did it alone. They didn't do it the way they wanted to do with a big party, but I think it gave them that, it showed people how committed they were, and I think that's something that, especially growing up in Texas and not always having been accepted because of their sexuality, is maybe even more powerful than to the average straight person.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Steve in Dallas. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yes. My question is this. My partner and I, after 16 years together, he decided to make a change. I had put him through college. I'm a real estate broker. I'd bought our first three houses, had put everything humanly possible in his name for tax purposes. And then at the end of the day, I am left with nothing. And when he decided to leave me, he was able to empty bank accounts and take title to everything. And after consulting with numerous attorneys and Lambda Legal, you know, every organization that, you know, promotes, you know, our kind of causes, I was told that under Texas law, that the only way that I could actually sue him for any sort of recovery, and that was highly unlikely, is under business statutes, that I have absolutely no recourse under marital statutes, and we were not legally married, but all credit cards, bank accounts, everything were in joint names.
Steve, I'm sorry to hear that that's your situation. Thank you for your call. Pamela, it sounds like this reaches back to this subject that we discussed earlier, the fact that couples who can't marry in Texas also can't legally divorce in Texas.
That's correct, and I'm so sorry for our caller still on the line for what he is going through. That sounds terrible, and it's actually a great illustration of how hard this is just for the average citizen. Think about the time and money that it will take him to try to recoup even a small percentage of what he lost, probably unsuccessfully. This also happens, again, when children are involved, that if the second parent has not gone through the second parent adoption process, which is quite costly, and the relationship breaks up, that second parent has no rights. So it really leaves a lot of people in limbo for no good reason. I mean, one of the things I was always struck by, this goes to the parenting issues, is the state has always argued that parenting is hugely beneficial for children. So why is it not beneficial also for children of gay partners? I think that's one of the things that has never been clear to me in their arguments.
Let's go on the phone now to Chad in Dallas. Hi, Chad.
Howdy. I have this discussion on a very frequent basis, being a gay male as well. The argument that I always make is that if you say we are gathered here to join this couple in holy, most people will say matrimony, and that matrimony is a religious rite. Marriage is actually a legal state. And so when people try to compare marriage equality on moral grounds or quoting scripture or whatever they try to do, they're actually comparing apples to oranges.
That's such a great point, and I'm so glad you made that. I think one misconception about all this is if, and I believe when, I think it'll be just a few months, same-sex marriage is legal in Texas, this certainly does not mean that churches will be compelled to perform these ceremonies. We're talking about civil ceremonies. And that's part of why I think the rhetoric at the Capitol last week was so unsettling. I mean, you have our lieutenant governor talking about people joining him in his, quote, army of Christ to fight same-sex marriage. That's pretty incendiary talk from the second most powerful man in the state.
So Nicole is expecting her and Cleo's daughter. They're kind of in any day now territory. What will happen with the legal status of that little girl when she is born? How long will it take before she legally has two parents?
It may take up to a year's time. And again, all sorts of things can happen in that year. One of the interesting things they did was they decided to take turns being pregnant, which I thought was sort of amazing. They can each talk to each other about the experience of being pregnant. And it's the same anonymous sperm donor, so the children are genetically related. But I think as far as what happens from here on out, they're once again going down that second parent adoption process. They have a home study coming up, I believe, this week. And so despite all these things they've done and all this time spent on this lawsuit, they're really back at square one.
And they're not waiting, sort of pending what might happen in the Fifth Circuit or what might happen in the Supreme Court. They're moving ahead just to be sure that they have all their ducks in a row.
Exactly. They have every form, every T crossed, every I dotted, which you really have to do to not be at risk for, having no rights or leaving your partner in a difficult situation.
Pamela Koloff is an executive editor at Texas Monthly. Her article, Modern Family, appears as the cover story for the March issue of the magazine. Pamela, it's been a really interesting discussion. Thank you so much for making this time for us.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered today by Alan Roberts. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Chris Boyd Think. And if you'd like to email the show, you can send that to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.